Hi, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and USA Today Network. This is Graham Couch here, alongside my colleague Chris Solari from the Detroit Free Press, and this is our Christmas edition, festive and all, of Spartan Speak. Chris, how you doing, brother?
Doing well, and happy holidays, Merry Christmas to you and yours, and everybody else out there. We are virtually side by side. We are actually recording this at an ungodly early morning hour for either of us.
Some people would call 8:45 on a Friday morning ungodly early. But
I to be fair, I've been up since the kids were up at after 7. And I'm sure just in the coming days, as Christmas gets nearer, that time will get earlier and earlier. But when you work nights and you cover a basketball game at night, even if it starts at 6:30, sometimes those nights get a little longer.
Especially if you meet a friend at the Rock Bar afterward. It tends to happen. So, which I highly recommend. Not a sponsor or anything. just a cool experience. And one of the many things that East Lansing has going for it these days. All right, there's a lot to get into today. And we could go hoops or football. I think we'll start with hoops. People are into both. We're going to do both here post-football signing day. But basketball, the vibe in hoops. Like I thought 2 weeks ago, doing a pod the week of football signing day, we'd definitely be just leaning into that and commiserating with hoops the way things are going. The basketball vibe has changed a ton, and the trajectory continues to be on the way up. Like, the thing about Thursday night's game, Chris, is you get an opponent like Stony Brook, who's not horrible for their level. That's a decent team in the Colonial Athletic Association. But Michigan State made them look like they were at a very different level. And that is a game that would have been more competitive, I think, a few weeks ago. But to MSU's credit, they understand they're playing well. They looked focused. A.J. Hogard and Tyson Walker looked very focused out of the gate. And I think a lot of the guys were, and it showed on the court. And so all of a sudden you have a 7-5 team. While that record still isn't great, the way they're playing now, I think the questions about whether that's a tournament team and all that sort of stuff, you can see it on the court. This is a really good college basketball team. Now, they will be tested again, and they will have some issues at some point along the way that'll be maddening at some point because it's early enough. But this is a team right now that all the offense that was hesitant and clunky is now a little more fluid. They play with purpose. Defensively, it's become something they can hang their hat on. What do you make of what's transpired with the basketball team here?
Well, it's a heck of an 11-day turnaround. I think that's one thing. And the biggest thing is that they are, as you said, playing with a purpose, playing with a flow. More importantly to me, it's they're not playing down to their opponents, which I think can be when you come off a game like Baylor, which surprised pretty much everybody, I think. And I think to a man, if you asked everybody on that team, they would be surprised that they did what they did to Baylor. Now, granted, they lost the second half, if you look at the composite, but they were up 30 points by that point. So, that first half against Baylor was about as close to a perfect game as you can get. I mean, it really was. I mean, they were out, they were running. They caught Baylor at the right time coming off a long layoff. And Baylor caught them at the wrong time coming off back-to-back Big Ten losses. So I think that the ability to carry the momentum forward, and A.J. Hogard and Tyson Walker and Jaden Akins kind of talked about where they're at right now. They're moving. They're moving forward every game, every practice. They're getting better, and that's what Tom Izzo wants right now. It'll be interesting, I think, because not only do they have a really difficult opponent coming up in Indiana State, but they've got that layoff coming up, and everybody's got to kind of deal with that. But can they sustain this kind of? I mean, 33 assists and 38 baskets against Stony Brook is kind of absurd when you think about it, especially when you think about where this team was 11 days ago.
Well, that's just it. Like, right, it's a team that that couldn't shoot. Like, even if they passed well, there was no way to get 33 assists.
No chance.
And now what you're seeing is, and obviously they started out the 2 for 31 from three in the first two games. And I know, you know, you can look at their numbers since then and say, oh, they're not so bad, but they didn't shoot over 35% from three in any of their first eight games. And since then, they've been, and last night the numbers tailed off at the end, but they've been over 38% in their last four. And, you know, I think they're like 36 for 78 or something like that. They have found something where they're playing loose and confident, and there seems to be some role definition. People are comfortable with where they are. They now know what it should look like. And I think that starts really at the point guard. The level of play, and Trey Holloman's a little bit of part of this too, from all their guards and
big part.
Tyson Walker's the constant and all that. But the level of play they're getting out of A.J. Hogard and Jeremy Fears continues to rise. And I think that is setting a tone. Like Hogard, for a game that was right before Christmas, and Izzo talked yesterday about how he had texted A.J. Hogard, worried about this game because of how many upsets historically happen in this game, and you're seeing them around the country in the game right after Christmas when guys are looking ahead and wanting to get out of town. And he texted Hogard concerned about it, and Hogard just said, you know, I'll have them ready. And he looked like a guy. They look like a team that knows, I don't want to say they wasted time, but they took a long time to get to, they don't have much more time to waste is a good way to put it, I guess. And that they found something and they want to maintain it and they want to grow on it. And Hogard looks like a guy who's found something after a frustrating start and wants to grow it and maintain it. And he looks, for a while, I really thought that Michigan State would be better without Hogard or Jeremy Fears Jr. I thought together, for whatever reason, whether it was Hogard looking over his shoulder, Fears not having enough time, whatever it was as a pairing, you know, and sort of platooning for each other, it wasn't ideal. But they seemed, Hogard has played so well that it's very clear that he's the guy. Fears is now playing better and getting more opportunities, and is a guy in that backup role with, like, what, 10 assists, one turnover, whatever he had last night. Fears, 10 assists, two turnovers. They just taking care of everybody, and the intensity with which Fears and Walker opened that game for that 13-2 start before the first media timeout.
Hogard
started the game, and that Hogard and Walker played with was, I mean, just telling. That was like the Baylor start. They went out there like that game was Baylor at LCA, and their season was on the line, and, you know, Stony Brook never had a chance.
And what's interesting is those two guys had really good starts at both ends of the court. Jaden Akins had a good start, but they weren't really going to or through them. I mean, they were trying to get the ball to Malik Hall. They were trying to get the ball. Well, Hogard, I think. Malik Hall and Hogard, to me, were the ones that they were trying to get the ball to and get them going offensively in those first few minutes. But Akins really kind of, when he started hitting some shots, he was aggressive. You saw Hogard getting downhill. You saw Akins coming off the dribble and hitting a couple shots. They need that. Now that said, Tom Izzo brought this up after the game, and he's 100% right. The rebounding is alarming. I mean, you can get away with this against a Stony Brook team, but again, 16 offensive boards against that team. And they won the battle on the boards by four. I think it was 45-41. That's going to be concerning moving forward, and it is right now for Tom Izzo, especially with Indiana State coming up. They've got a quality big man, and they need to get – it's not even that they need to rebound better. They need to box out, and they need to prevent opposing teams. I mean, 16 offensive boards, and that's been a problem all year, even with this three-game streak. It's been an issue. So it's not like this is 100% – positive right now, but it is steps. It is good steps incrementally to get to where they want to get to.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons last night's game was so important in the way they played and dominated is the next game is Indiana State, which is much better than they anticipated. They would not have scheduled this game, I don't think, if they knew Indiana State was going to be like this. and they're playing a team that, what are they, 11-1 or 10-1 at this point. And and they've got a good big man. They've got a lot of good. I mean, they're a tournament team. They're playing extremely well, and it's going to test MSU, which is probably good headed into Big Ten play. But the way last night's games happened makes that game okay, because I think they got a game where they got to continue to build confidence, and they looked really good offensively and really smooth. Just looked so different.
You can't drop another home game, though.
No. But, correct. But they ought to beat Indiana State as good as they are at home. Like, if you're going to contend in the Big Ten and get anywhere, a good Indiana State team, the top of the Missouri Valley, comes into Breslin Center, you ought to win that game if you're at the top of the Big Ten. But they did get a game where they got to, like, I thought yesterday's game was really big for Xavier Booker. And they needed a game where he got to have those opportunities and perform well and grow. Whereas if you play, you know, two Indiana States and it's a competitive game, and even if he's a, you know, getting 3 minute spots in the rotation, you're not able to give him 16 minutes like you did last night. You're not able to let him grow into the game where, you know, in other games where he's missed an alley-oop or gone up a little soft, they've made the sub pretty quick because they're in a competitive game. Well, in this game, he got an opportunity then to get the dunk over a 7-footer, the alley-oop dunk that Fears threw him, that Fears could have taken a floater there. Really speaks to who Jeremy Fears is and what he wants for Booker. And Booker played really well, blocked three shots, hit a three. I mean, there are things he doesn't do yet, but for me, there were big steps for him, and he's going to leave going to Christmas and come back feeling pretty good about things, and I don't think that's not nothing, I would say.
I'd caution throwing the three blocks in there just simply because two of them came in absolute garbage time.
Sure, that's fair.
Yeah. One of them though, it was a real big sign of growth for him, because he gets the block on the defensive end, and he is out and running the middle lane and running fast and running hard, the kind of the way that Tom Izzo wants his bigs to do when they run the middle. And AJ Hogard, who got the ball after it, he had an odd angle to try and get the ball to Booker, but he saw him running, got the ball up court in the corner to Jay Nakins, who had a clear lane to deliver it to Booker for a bounce pass for the dunk. That was as good a sequence as we've seen from Xavier Booker on the offensive end and defensive end, I thought. And then his defense is coming. There were times where he was getting better positionally, where he wasn't afraid to push and shove. We saw that, in the game against Oakland as well, where he was in the post trying to push a guy out, and Tom Izzo, he got a foul, and Tom Izzo applauded because that's what he wants. He needs him to be a physical presence. He can't have him just be pushed around. And, you know, the strength piece is going to take time, but there's definitely, in the last two games, I thought there was some growth for Booker that is big. And, you know, you mentioned about Fears. 10 assists is nothing to sneeze at. And he's seeing the game at a very high level. And when you have, I mean, they had 33 assists, and 26 of them came between Hogard, Fears, and Holloman.
Yeah.
Those are three guys. When you think back to the 2020-21 season, ironically enough, with Rocket Watts having been into Breslin Center on Monday with Oakland, you think back to the point where Tom Izzo didn't have any guards. Point guards. He's got an abundance of them right now. And that bodes well later in the year.
The point guard play is at a very high level right now, and that's it's weird because it just wasn't there for a while, and it was both of them in the sense that Hogard was not this. Like, he looked so comfortable in his skin, so to speak. He looked so comfortable with who he is, what he can do, and who he is for this MSU team, regardless of what Fears does. And they needed to get to that place. And now Fears is playing well, because for a long time I thought the problem with Fears' struggles was that, you know, he was playing the backup minutes that late last year went to Tyson Walker. And Walker was just better than Fears. Now, Walker was a senior last year, his first senior year. Fears a freshman. Totally understood. The problem is, When Hogard wasn't playing as well as he did last year and Fears wasn't as good as Walker, you were getting no minutes at the point guard position that were really as good as last year, at least late last year when they were playing well. Now Hogard is playing as well as I've seen him play. Now he's played very well at times in the past. And Fears continues to rise, and he's a freshman. We expected that. But the level of play there, and then what you're getting from Holloman is a shooter, is a secondary ball distributor, ball handler. And their sort of understanding of getting guys, like the way they got Akins involved last night. Jaden Akins is obviously struggled offensively. His first five shots were oops and dunks, and they're all inside the arc. Most of them were alley-oops and dunks and transition buckets and things where he's getting his hand on the ball in situations that make you start feeling good about your game, and then the three started to foul. And I think that is just a really... They're a group of point guards that seem to understand what their teammates need from them right now and what the team needs and who they should be. And that's – now, look, they're going to start facing – like when they go to Northwestern and Illinois in early January, we'll learn a little bit about what that means in really tight games, because these three games haven't been tight in part because of the way they've played. But we will see how they take care of things in pressure moments in the weeks to come.
Yeah, I thought, and I think this is kind of the thing, you're seeing both Hogard and Fears embrace their roles, where A.J. Hogard isn't looking for as much for his outside shot. He's not abandoning it, but he's picking and choosing better spots, making better decisions on when to shoot and attacking more off the dribble, which is allowing him to create for others. And Fears, I think, is kind of playing minutes very similarly and at a different level than Trey Holloman was last year, worrying about the defensive end and the distribution side of things and not worrying as much about scoring. There were times where he was trying to get to the bucket and had some struggles on his offensive side, but his best offense was getting to the basket and setting other guys up. And I think he kind of realized that. You saw that with that Booker pass on the alley-oop, I think was one of them. And then there was another one where he was cutting along the baseline and gave a feed in the middle to someone for an easy bucket.
Yeah, even Izzo's having a tough time complaining right now. And that's rare. Usually after, you know, there's a pattern when we cover these games where after he has a couple good games, there's usually a press conference where he's like, well, even when they win big, you know, I didn't play all that well. I didn't practice all that well. Just trying to sort of keep them on their toes. And I think he's, after the start they had, really happy with things. I think people should be. It'll get, you know, obviously real pretty quick and once they come back. But you have to feel better about the position they're in. Let's talk some football. This has been a few developments this week. One, Harlan Barnett will not be part of Jonathan Smith's staff. It had been interesting because pretty quickly they came out and said Courtney Hawkins would, and then there'd been nothing on Barnett, and so you thought, well, maybe this would go this way. And it sounds like they were looking at three different secondary coaches that weren't Barnett, and basically told him if you know nothing happens there, we'll. You know, you might be the guy, but that was enough for Barnett to know that he wasn't their guy and want to just take his name out and move on. That's fine for, like, you have every right to put together the staff you want to put together if you're Jonathan Smith. And I think, you know, Barnett served the program admirably in the last, for a long time, frankly, but also in these last few months, whatever you think of him as a head coach, and there were some mistakes made, obviously, but his intent and what he wanted to do and how much he cared about MSU, I don't think were ever in doubt. The other story that I think is the big story of the week is signing day, and Jonathan Smith's first 3 weeks are complete, and he's got 18 new high school prospects signed, 5 transfers in the fold, and a number of guys popping out of the portal. Chris, just give me your sort of 10,000-foot view of the class and of the start for Jonathan Smith.
Well, I think when you look at what he did, I mean, I think there were, I believe, eight guys that he brought along with him from Oregon State. That's kind of the nature of the sport right now. I mean, you know, for all the changes that have happened, you know, I was thinking back, the last time that Michigan State was in a position like this was 2006 when they hired Mark D'Antonio in December after the John L. Smith era. We need to figure out if there's any relation between Jonathan and John L. We haven't asked that question yet. That's been on my agenda. That just reminded me there for a minute.
Both of them spent time coaching in the same region out west.
They did. But that's kind of the nature of the beast now. When you think back to that 06 period when they hired D'Antonio, first of all, half of his staff stayed at Cincinnati for the bowl game. Narduzzi was the head coach, interim head coach for that bowl game. So it took them a while to get their full staff to East Lansing. Second of all, there was no early signing day. So they had until early February to build their class, flip some guys from Cincinnati, but keep guys or, you know, find other guys in the state of Michigan that really Jonathan Smith didn't have a lot of time to do. So there's definitely some differences in that, what, 17 years ago. I mean, it was 17 years ago. And by the way, that was into 2007 or February 2007. So when D'Antonio assembled his class. But I do like what Smith did in terms of bringing his guys in that he knows. He's already recruited them. He doesn't need to reintroduce himself to those guys. He identified the targets that he wanted to, and, you know, in fact, I mean, they kept, I believe, six of the seven guys, and one of them, Jaden Walker, the linebacker who's from Portage Northern, is getting highly recruited now by USC. So he's going to wait until the second signing day, it sounds like, unless something pops here on Friday, which is the 3-day window ends today. You know, if you're listening to this, depending on when it is. So there could be another change or whatever that may happen with Jaden Walker. So, but I like it. I like what he did. He brought in two high school quarterback recruits too, which also mimicked what D'Antonio did his first class with Nick Foles and Kirk Cousins, who was a late flip and add after Keith Nichol bailed on them. So, there are a lot of similarities, and I do think that, you know, I think there was getting Brady Pretzloff too. You know, it was important, I think, to one, from an in-state standpoint, to get a kid like that who I think's got a real high upside, and two, you could see partly why that Joe Rossi hire was important, because they identified a kid there who had been committed to Minnesota, and Rossi was the D coordinator there before they brought him in. So, all in all, I think this went as good of a signing day as Michigan could have done under the circumstances.
Yeah, and I think we still don't know exactly, you know, what Jonathan Smith will be as a recruiter and even some of his priorities. We get a little bit of a sense of things. I mean, he talked about what he's looking for in a quarterback with the shortstop, third baseman reference and the types of, you know, a player with a strong enough arm and quick feet over there and good thinker, but not doesn't have to have a rifle, right? And
I'm all for more baseball references from my football coaches.
And but it, also, because it's such a frenzied period, different than, you know, D'Antonio, you know, and different from, and they do need to. I'd ask Jonathan Smith about that, because the calendar right now doesn't work, and we've talked about this, and whatever they go to, they need to. You can't have the college football signing period be, or the high school signing period be now, when transfers are trying to figure out if they want to be on campus. Your own kids are trying to figure out what they want to do. Your own players, and then you're trying to figure out the portal in a situation where you're a new staff. You're trying to hire a staff. Hires are being made. It makes for a lot of very quick decisions that I think will ultimately lead to more kids being in the portal, because they weren't perfect for those kids or perfect for that staff, right?
And I gave that follow-up too about, well, why not go to a signing day before the season? And he's worried. He said that there are coaches who are worried about kids opting out of their high school senior year, which makes a lot of sense, quite honestly.
Yeah, no, I think the August thing, while it sounds good in theory, I can see the issues with it too. There is no perfect situation. There's a reason they created the early signing period. But it now with the portal in place the way it is, it doesn't work like it used to work. So, but under the circumstances, you're right. I mean, they get a couple four-star kids. They get a number of kids that they had relationships with and, you know, targeted at Oregon State. They get a big class, a bigger class than some of Tucker's in terms of numbers, which is interesting because Tucker, you know, and I'm not knocking Tucker for this. One thing that Mel Tucker had sort of, it seemed to have understood, is that there was a level of player he had to recruit to compete with Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State. And he wasn't really going to settle for option B. They were going to get that kid or they were going to go in the portal. And I'm not going to knock that because the mission and the goal for him was to compete with those schools. Now, eventually you got to have numbers and you also have to develop kids. And part of it is uncovering enough mostly three stars at this stage. Nobody gets a two star anymore, but enough three stars who you can develop into guys who are, you know, four or five star quality that you know, and that's what you have to do at a place like Michigan State. And I think that was lacking. But I'm not going to overall knock that. The other big thing that I think's happened here with Jonathan Smith, and we're starting to see as late as yesterday, late afternoon and evening, is a number of guys are jumping back out of the portal and staying. Those 2022 and 2023 classes of Mel Tucker, which I think were really promising, a lot of the key guys from there and the defensive backfield and the receiver are staying. And that is going to help this current staff get off to a decent start. And so you get to actually get the fruit of those classes a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, touching on the thing that you mentioned about Tucker's philosophy, I mean, I don't even know if I would call it Tucker's philosophy. Tucker changed the game. I mean, for whatever you want to say about it, there's no Deion Sanders if there's not Mel Tucker in a couple different ways. But what Deion Sanders has done is take what Mel Tucker did to another level with the portal, with to flip an entire roster. And it's funny because I remember when Tucker did that after the 2020 season, it was kind of unheard of. People were like, well, guys are going to, I mean, there's processing that's happening here. Guys are getting cut. What is happening? These scholarships are supposed to be guaranteed. And I remember asking Pat Fitzgerald, speaking of someone who also was out of work, at the Big Ten Media Day, I said, how many coaches around the country do you think are watching this? And he said, everybody, if it works, he's like, everybody's a thief, basically. You know, everybody's going to take it and go. And here we are now, 2 years later, 2.5 years later, it's the norm. And that quickly, everything changed with college football. And remember, that was before the NIL era. That has flipped it even more on its head. So, you know, I don't know if you want to credit or castigate Mel Tucker for changing that or shifting that paradigm, but because I do think it was going to happen regardless. Coaches live in the gray area, but we'll see what Jonathan Smith does with the portal. He obviously getting Aiden Childs, that's a big one. So they've got three scholarship quarterbacks as of right now. I still think you got to think about going into the portal and getting a veteran either from a lower level who's got 1 year left and wants to play up, someone that needs to be comfortable if they're a backup and isn't going to be a squeaky wheel, because you do need some veteran experience. I mean, I don't think you can go into this year. Maybe you can. I mean, the baseline 6 wins. You got to get back to that bowl game. But I still think you need a backup that has experience here. But, you know, you got a couple guys from the Big Ten, TJ Sheffield and Jordan Turner, wide receiver from Purdue and Sheffield, and linebacker from Wisconsin and Turner. You know, Jack Velling, the tight end from Oregon State, comes over. They got the defensive end from Middle Tennessee State. So it's slow build with the portal right now, and I think that probably that's because the biggest focus has been assembling that high school class. Now they can spend the next, whatever, up to January 4th, examining some of those portal guys and getting them on campus and filling some more needs. And maybe those needs are filled internally. I mean, he did say that they're going to actively, they're not everybody, but he is actively recruiting and pushing for guys on the current roster who are in the portal to come back. So I guess stay tuned with some of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the portal is recruiting your own guys, especially in a year where your new staff and guys jumped in. Yeah, and the Childs is obviously – getting Aiden Childs is the big get. We've talked about that a little bit. But that speaks to – I mean, they had to get a guy. They had to get a quarterback. And to get the one that you had recruited at Oregon State that was a really promising prospect and to be able to continue to grow with that guy, if you're – Jonathan Smith is ideal, right?
I will say this, though. He is still a second-year quarterback
who
has 91 collegiate snaps to his name.
No, and everybody, and this is not a Michigan State fan base thing, but every fan base, and frankly, it happens in media circles too. You know, we tend to overhype guys before they're ready sometimes and not realize that, you know, 19- and 20-year-olds need to grow into this level of play, especially at that position. So there will be some lumps for him. They, you know, they frankly need to build a roster around him that allows him to have success, and that's up front, and that's with playmakers, and then as many as you can have, and guys who I know people are excited about a guy like Nick Marsh, but you know we've also seen a lot of young receivers take time, and that's might or might not happen with Marsh.
Antonio Gates Jr. on the roster. I mean, came in with a high pedigree and a very high skill level and still hasn't made an impact yet. I mean, it's kind of a comparative with Xavier Booker situation, right? I mean, a lot of what you see sometimes in those cottage industry ratings, we'll call them that, sometimes they're bought and paid for ratings, but a lot of what you see in that is based on athletic ability and potential, not where they're at the moment.
Yeah. No, and you know, like Aaron Burbridge wound up being a really good receiver at the end and had one great game as a freshman, but really wasn't ready. Keon Coleman, another guy. Like, look who he became. And so getting some of these guys who were sophomores who have had 2 years, you know, obviously a different system, but with Courtney Hawkins and, you know, a redshirt freshman they were or whatever, that have had 2 years in the program, 2 years of college football to come back and to continue to develop, I think, is important. Those guys more likely, you know, Jerron Glover is more likely to be ready to go next year at a higher level than he's played before, you know. And so those are really big gets, I think, and important things in terms of having an offense that gives Childs a chance. And, and I also think people will be – what's sort of interesting is – next year, I thought, was a big year for Mel Tucker, if he had still been the coach and on the trajectory that everything was on, right? And I thought 2025 was the year where it really had to show that he was competing at the level of the top teams in the Big Ten, because that would have been the year that, you know, his first real recruiting class was juniors and redshirt seniors, and most of his players were sort of permeating the program. This past year, I thought, was always going to be around a 500 year. Next year, they needed to show more signs and be more competitive. But what getting Jonathan Smith does, even if you have a lot of those recruits, is it allows a little bit of a reset of expectations. I think people will give them time to they want to see competence. They want to see potential. They want to have good moments. They want to be competitive. But I think it'll also people will give this staff and this group time to get where they need to go, and I think people were running a little out of patience with Mel.
Yeah, I mean, you know, how the quarterback situation was handled is really the first place you got to look to see where and why that situation devolved to where it did this year. I mean, it didn't matter if Keon Coleman was there or not. They didn't have anybody delivering the ball, and that was a problem. I'll say this, you know, because we did, we touched on Harlan earlier. Harlan Barnett was in a position where he was set up for failure, really, regardless, because this, you know, because of that situation, there was no quarterback. He had no, that wasn't his decision to make on who in the spring would have come out of that with a job and how it was handled. But he had to inherit that, and he had to deal with, you know, as we saw, as the guys left the program. I mean, you know, Noah Kim ends up at Coastal Carolina. Caton Hauser ends up at East Carolina. Water finds its weight. You know, water finds its level. And then Sam Levitt, you weren't going to be able to start Sam Levitt as a true freshman when he's showing up in the middle of the summer. I mean, there was no, regardless if he was, and what we saw, he was the most talented quarterback. There's no chance they could have in the beginning of the year, even after two games and when Noah Kim started to falter, gone to him because he needed some seasoning as well. But to me, the way that Mel Tucker had that program, it was not Harlan Barnett's roster. It wasn't Harlan Barnett's philosophies. When you're two games into a year, you can't shift and change things to how you want it when you don't have a spring, when you don't have a preseason camp. You got to kind of go on the fly on that. And, you know, they got the four wins, I thought was a big thing. But I also think that Harlan Barnett's taken far too many unnecessary arrows from Michigan State fans over the last couple weeks and months. When, if you look at it, you know, he was a caretaker. This wasn't a program for him to kind of put an imprint on.
No, but to be, yeah, and he said, I talked to him yesterday, he basically said, yeah, you know, this wasn't his program or his staff, you know, and he thinks he could do this. Now that's fine, but it wasn't like, you know,
he wasn't perfect either. It was the first time as a coach.
And there were things that you know, and I know there were some onside kicks and some other decisions that weren't great. But the big thing for me, the moment that I, you know, and obviously he wasn't going to get the job pretty early when things started to go awry and the way they lost some of those games with leads and whatnot. But it was the Sam Levitt situation and the way that was handled and answered and the idea that, you know, when he was running out of five or out of his four games to retain his eligibility and finally did, and Barnett was asked about it, it was sort of, well, who could have seen this coming? Well, everybody, like we all were counting on the games.
He was by far the most talented quarterback that I saw in the little bit of practice we saw in this fall.
Right, and look, if they had hired Jonathan Smith, he was likely to leave anyway, and they got a guy coming in, and if they had brought Childs in, I don't know what he would have done had he stayed or wanted to stay. But certainly if he had had, say, started the last four games of the season and shown some real promise as a starting quarterback, and you thought, boy, that guy looks like you got the guy, and he was sort of entrenched in that position, these are different conversations that would have been had now.
That one series at the end of the Maryland game was a big, big problem, because if you take that out and you had one more game after he played against Wisconsin and led them on that touchdown drive, or Nebraska, I mean, and you led them that touchdown drive against Nebraska, if he has one more game, he might have got a chance to start that one.
Yeah, and but then again, if he might,
I think Ohio State was next, right?
and it'll be interesting to watch his career and how it goes at Arizona State. I still have a lot of stock in who Sam Levitt is. There's something about what he is as a player. But that's, you know, again, what happened, you know, Barnett, that's last year. The 4-8 is last year. Sam Levitt is last year, and what is now is I think a roster that has enough potentially to give a good coach a chance to be competitive in year one.
As of December 22nd.
Yes. And so that we'll see where that is. But I don't think it's got to be an awful year. And part of that is because Mel Tucker wasn't fired because they were losing. He was fired for other reasons. And he did have a couple classes of guys that should be a big part of what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, there's talent that did not go into the portal, which I think is important, although the portal is still open till January 4th.
Yeah.
But when you haven't heard anything about guys like Jaden Mangum and Dylan Tatum, you know, Malik Spencer, those guys haven't left the program or gone into the portal, you know, and that's just a sampling of just off the top of my head. There's other guys that haven't either.
No,
you know, it's, even a guy like Simeon Barrow has not gone back into portal, and Jonathan Smith was talking about him. So, I mean, there's a solid nucleus of talent, you know, both veteran and young, that you can build around. But again, like I was saying, it's December 22nd. We're not gonna. I can't project a roster or even a depth chart until we get through spring ball, because there's going to be more guys coming and going. There's going to be more guys that are going to leave the program again in April, and there'll be more guys coming in after that. It's the reality of college football is it is no longer that. I'll tell you this, don't pick up those preseason magazines, because they're not going to be updated in time to have the most relevant roster information.
I'm so glad I don't write any of those anymore. That was the bane of my existence, especially toward the end. Well, I think we'll leave it there. Everybody else has a Christmas to attend, and I hope everybody has a great one and enjoys their family. And if you get tired of your family, you know, have something else to do, listen to this podcast or watch football. A lot of great football and Premier League soccer on and things to do over the holidays. So, Chris, we will come back. I doubt we'll do one next week. There's a game, you know, late in the week, but we'll probably come back early in the new year and talk about where things are, and little football, little basketball, and go from there. You have a Merry Christmas, sir.
You as well, and same to everybody listening. We appreciate you for bearing with us sometimes and our infrequent and up and down schedules, but we love doing this, and I hope you have a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
This has been a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and USA Today Network. Please rate, subscribe, throw fruit, whatever it is. Have a Merry Christmas, and thanks for listening.